Good morning, everybody. Welcome to the Planet FM meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. My name's Judy and I'm an alcoholic. I will be chairing our meeting this morning. Would you all like to help me open the meeting with the Serenity Prayer, please? God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, courage to change the things I can, and wisdom to know the difference. I'll now read the AA preamble. Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of people who share their experience, strength and hope with each other that they may solve their common problem and help others to recover from alcoholism. The only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. There are no dues or fees for AA membership. We are self-supporting through our own contributions. AA is not allied with any sect, denomination, politics, organization, or institution, does not wish to engage in any controversy, neither endorses nor opposes any causes. Our primary purpose is to stay sober and help other alcoholics to achieve sobriety. Thank you all for joining us this morning. Today, our speakers are Jason, Fran, and Sarah, and they will be sharing on their experience, strength, and hope. Jason, would you like to start us off, please?
Yeah, thanks, Judy. My name is Jason. I'm an alcoholic. Yeah, I'm sober today by the grace of God, the 12-step program of Alcoholics Anonymous and its fellowship. You know, today these are the three most important things in my life, and they need to be, and I want them to be today. You know, and there's actually quite some irony in there because, you know, before I got to Alcoholics Anonymous, I didn't want a God in my life. I didn't believe in a God. I didn't really necessarily think I needed one. You know, I didn't think I needed a fellowship of like-minded people who could help me through life. You know, I thought I had my life under control. Clearly, I didn't. You know, I had a reasonable childhood growing up. You know, a nice, loving family, caring family, but never felt like I fit in with any of my friends or any of my family, for that matter. And to get people to like me, I would create stories so they thought I was some sort of fantastical person, and wow, he's really cool. We'll have him around. And also had this fear inside me of these people only like me because they feel sorry for me or they've been told to include me. And so I had this isolated feeling going right through my childhood. And, you know, that led me into my teens. And you know, through my teens, I involved myself in solo sports. You know, I started racing push bikes, and then I spent a long time climbing mountains and cliffs and things. And you know, they're all sports that keep me away from groups, keep me away from big crowds of people, because I didn't know how to I didn't know how to establish those relationships with people, those close relationships, those friendships. Always felt awkward about it. Always felt anxious about it. That trait followed me right through my life, and you know, by the time I actually really started drinking, I probably need to go back a bit. I do remember those times in my younger years. My father would take me to the archery club, and the archery club was really cool because we'd get treated to a shandy. And that shandy was really cool because I could feel like one of the adults, you know. And you know, I could run around and talk to the adults and be with the adults. And then I'd spend the rest of the week looking forward to going back to the archery club because I'd get another shandy, you know. And that's that mental obsession, obsessing about going back to the archery club because I'd get another shandy. I could pretend to be one of the adults again. And I could feel like I was included. Excuse me. And by the time I actually really started drinking socially, it was funny. I found the social lubricant where I could actually start talking to people and embarking in conversations which I knew nothing about but thought I knew everything about. And it was wonderful. It just eased that anxiety and that stress of trying to deal with people, and that followed me through sort of most of my life and until my drinking really kicked off. You know, one of the things I found out over the years is I wasn't dealing with those fears and those anxieties and that built up anger and so forth from my childhood, and I remember the day quite clearly. When I made a conscious decision to get absolutely drunk to hide from my feelings, and all of a sudden I found a solution to feeling. If I drank more, I didn't feel. You know, and it worked. And it worked for a while. After that period of time, I needed a bit more, so I had a bit more, and then I needed a bit more, and I had a bit more, and you know, long story short, you know, by the end of my drinking, I was a 24/7 drunk. I spent the last probably a little over a year of my life 24/7 drunk, coming to in the morning, scrounging through the dregs and the empties so I could get enough alcohol in me, stop the shakes enough so I could get to the wholesalers to buy some more. You know, that's where my best thinking and my self-will took me, you know. It was my best thinking and my self-will that decided getting drunk to hide from my feelings was the right thing to do. You know, it's actually quite funny. I remember the first time my hand started shaking in the middle of the day, and you know, most normal people would geez, this ain't right, I need to go to the doctor or something. No, I knew exactly what to do. I went and had another drink, and it was good, you know, it stopped the shakes. Excellent. I can fix this as well. You know, this is my best thinking in my self-will. And I remember one morning my partner said to me, I took her a cup of tea in the morning, and she said to me, "Do you remember anything of last night?" And it was the first time I'd hung my head in absolute shame, sitting on the side of the bed saying, "No, I don't." But it couldn't stop me drinking. I couldn't stop drinking. And I also remember the day she rung me up when I was at work and said, "I can't do this anymore. Don't bother coming home." And that couldn't stop me drinking either. I became this unwilling, unknowing member of Alcoholics Anonymous, this organisation I didn't even know existed. About 3.5 years before I made it to my first meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous, I had a desire to stop drinking. I could see the carnage and the damage that I was creating, and I could associate it to my drinking, so the drinking had to stop. The only thing that stopped when I stopped drinking was the drinking. I was still there. You know, I was still creating the carnage and the damage. I got to about 6.5 months of dry time. And that clown in the mirror lied to me and said, "See, you're not an alcoholic, you haven't got a problem, you haven't had a drink for 6.5 months, celebrate, never drink." So I did, you know. Within 24 hours, I was needing to drink more than what I was 6.5 months earlier. And, for the next 3 years, it was just relapse after relapse until I was 24/7 drunk, sick and tired of living, sick and tired of existing, just wanting to die. And I remember that turning point, that jumping off point, where I finally conceded to my innermost self that I was an alcoholic. And my prayers changed. My prayers changed from, "God, get me out of this. I won't do this again," to, "God, I'm scared and I don't know what to do and I don't want to die. Please help me." You know, and for the first time in a long time, that was the best night's sleep I think I'd ever had. And the following day, I went to my first meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, I connected with this guy that I really didn't want to talk to. I hated him. I hated his motorbike. I hated him. I hated everything about it. And I connected with him because he started telling my story. He started talking about my fears, my shame, my guilt. And I couldn't believe it. I connected with this guy. And all of a sudden, for the first time in my entire life, I wasn't alone anymore. I belonged somewhere. I truly felt I belonged somewhere. You know, and, through God's grace, this is my first time in Alcoholics Anonymous, and with God's grace, it will be my only time in Alcoholics Anonymous. From that meeting, I've never looked back. I've been gifted with a family that want me around. They trust me. They respect me today. My son, God bless him, he loves spending time with me today, and I destroyed that kid. You know, because of what Alcoholics Anonymous and the Fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous has gifted me. I just have this incredible life, and I can't thank you guys enough for it. So thank you very much for listening to me ramble.
Thanks, Jason. That was a powerful share. Thank you. Fran, would you like to share now, please?
Really nice to be here this morning. My name's Fran and I am an alcoholic. So I'll just share a little bit about my experience, strength and hope. My drinking story, probably I remember having my first drink at about 11 years old, and it was someone had left a beer in the kitchen, and I was with a school friend of mine, and we just thought it was a good idea to, you know, take a little sip and be a bit naughty. And just remember, you know, loving the way that drink made me feel. And I became a binge drinker in my early teens. It was pretty normal in my social scene. We'd all, you know, live for the weekends and go out and drink. And I just loved the way that alcohol made me feel. It took away the anxiety and the fear of what other people thought of me, and also the, you know, how I felt that, you know, something was missed, the hole in the soul that I've heard it called here. And alcohol just relieved all of that. So I loved the stuff. And I was never able to just have a couple of drinks. It would always be all or nothing. And I could never drink, you know, like my friends did. I was, you know, always the one being carried out of the party, or, you know, sent home in a taxi, or picked up from vomiting in the gutter. So not very glamorous, but you know, I absolutely loved what alcohol did for me. So the, you know, the benefits outweighed the bad bits. I just continued on that way throughout my teens and early 20s. Even the horrific hangovers didn't stop me. And I remember waking up so many times with, having to piece together the night before, messaging people, you know, what did I do? What did I say? And it was all a bit of a joke, to be honest. And, as I say, everyone else was, you know, around me was doing similar things. And I just thought that's, you know, it was a rite of passage and that's what you did. And, so that just continued on until, I got home from a trip, a stint in London where my drinking had escalated, and I'd come home and thinking I was going to be starting a life with my partner, and that didn't eventuate, and my sort of dreams of, you know, a fairy tale ending with him were over, and my drinking just spiraled out of control from there. And I was starting to drink a bottle of wine every night, and just pretty much, you know, drowning my sorrows, I guess. And then somewhere along the line, that I discovered that I didn't have to feel so tragic the next day if I continued drinking. So I turned into a daily drinker. You know, I'd be drinking as soon as work finished, popping into Countdown and filling up a McDonald's cup with wine, because I just couldn't wait to get the relief into me that wine, that drink gave me. It really took a hold, and my life was spiraling out of control. I was living just to drink, and my life became very, very small. Just revolved around being able to take the next drink. And I just remember I started to, you know, physically get really sick. I was, you know, mentally really unwell. It was just an awful way to live. And but I just couldn't stop. And, you know, I had tried over the years various different things, and trying to manage it, and you know, cutting down or moderating, and I just wasn't able to. And I was so strong-willed in other areas of my life. It was really hard to wrap my head around that I just couldn't get this drinking under control, you know, when it was doing so much damage. And eventually I got to a point where the alcohol had stopped working for me. Like I drank to the point where it was having no effect. And I remember looking at, you know, a bottle of wine thinking, is this, you know, maybe I've got a dud, because I was just getting no effect from it. So it was at that point, and I was waking up feeling my liver, you know, I wasn't sleeping through the night. I was having to drink to get myself back to sleep. I was vomiting and drinking, you know, one going in, one going out. And I remember thinking, you know, it was my rock bottom, I guess. And I just realized the absolute powerlessness that I had over drinking. And so fortunately, I ended up in a treatment centre through the Salvation Army, not even realising that I was an alcoholic. To me, I had an image in my mind of, you know, what an alcoholic was, and it was, you know, the brown paper bag and the homeless person, and that just wasn't me. So it was hard for me to, you know, match that to my story. Through that treatment centre, I was introduced to the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous and had to attend meetings. And it was through these rooms that I heard other people share my story and share how I felt. And it was actually like a real relief to me to know what my problem was. And after feeling, you know, all my life different and, you know, something was missing, it was just wonderful to, you know, come across this fellowship of people that felt the same way, and to understand that, you know, I was suffering from, you know, the disease of alcoholism. And, you know, it wasn't, you know, I had made some really bad decisions, but ultimately, you know, I was a sick person, and you know, it wasn't my fault, and that I could recover if I did a few simple things that this program suggested. You know, so I got a sponsor, and I did the steps, the 12 steps that we have in AA. And, you know, I came to believe in a power greater than myself. And I know that, yeah, puts a lot of people off the whole God thing, but, you know, the beauty of it is it's a God of your understanding. And it's just been the most wonderful journey. And, you know, that the most important thing, you know, in my life today is my relationship with that higher power, and trying to be, you know, a better person. And just coming to meetings regularly just reminds me of where I've been, and it gives me the tools to deal with life on life's terms now, you know, because I've put down the drink, but I'm still left with me, and AA, you know, helps me deal with that. So, yeah, really good to be here. Thank you.
Thank you so much for sharing your story, Fran. And last but not least, Sarah would like to share her experience, strength and hope with you.
Yeah, thanks. Hi, Sarah, alcoholic. My sobriety date is the 29th of January 2018. I'm very, very grateful to be here and to be able to offer my experience, strength and hope with you. I came into Alcoholics Anonymous as a alcoholic mother. I had three sons. At the time, they were 7, 10 and 17, and they saw a lot of my drinking. I came into meetings and I heard people share about their experience of parenting while being alcoholic. And it was not until I really came into AA I fully grasped that I, in fact, didn't just have a little problem with drinking, but that I was, in fact, an alcoholic, and that other women lived with the same burden and bitter shame. They saw a lot of things, and they didn't really understand. And my best thinking to try and protect them from my drinking was to not slow it down, was to not moderate it because I couldn't. It was to hide it. So I felt they saw too much of my drinking, and so I started to put it into a mug, or I started to hide the cans at the end of the night so they wouldn't see how many empties they were. I had no idea that my thinking was warped or faulty. This made sense to me. My priority was drinking. That is the bottom line. I love my children. I always loved my children, but I needed my medicine. When I came into AA, I was very lucky to get a sponsor. And she sat me down, and we'd sit in a cafe at 7:30 in the morning on Saturday morning, and we would read the book before the meeting. And she took me through the doctor's opinion, and it really helped me to understand that I had a disease. It helped me realise that without a drink, I'm restless, irritable, and discontent. I want the sense of ease and comfort that comes at once when I take a drink. So I drink, and I feel better, but I have this allergy that then kicks in, and I go through the well-known stages of a spree. Like, I had no idea that this is the chain of events that putting alcohol, just a little bit, in my body would set off. I go through the spree and I do things that give me that absolute regret and just incomprehensible, you know, like mind-shattering demoralization. And I go through a lot of guilt and remorse. I swear to myself I'll stop. But I can't, because I get this strange, peculiar mental twist that comes along and it says, look at everyone else drinking. They're drinking with impunity. They're not having any consequences. I don't want any consequences. And I make it okay for myself. I made it okay for myself over and over again, no matter how bad it got, to pick up the next drink. And when I read that in the doctor's opinion, I realized that that is not just me. That is the disease of alcoholism. And it's an actual disease that isn't just in my mind, it's in my body. I have an allergy as well as a mental obsession. It's insanity, and it just goes round and round and round. And I often think about rock bottoms, like, I don't just go deeper. It's like I'm going round and round and just slapping my backside on the bottom harder and harder every time. And it's like, how many times do I need to do it? This week, I lost a family member to this disease, and he had been in recovery for over a decade and a half. His sobriety birthday would have been last Saturday. He died the day before that and ended up on life support before he was unfortunately unable to recover, and we let him go on Monday. He worked hard, really hard, in these rooms. He did all the suggested things. He did service, he had home groups, and he drifted away. And he's not a cautionary tale. He's a beautiful, beautiful man, and he continued to be a beautiful, beautiful man, and he is so, so loved. So, so loved. But he didn't have the program in his life anymore. We're not bad people, we're sick people. We suffer from a condition. It's not our fault we have this condition. It is something that needs to be treated. And I did get the pleasure one time of being in a meeting and celebrating his 13th sobriety birthday with him. And an old timer, a lovely woman who shared his birthday, who's now passed, who was in my home group. And it was a magical moment. And it inspired me to go forward. And I'm so grateful I got to share that with him. But on Wednesday, we will bury him on his birthday. And that is the reality. That is the grim reality of our disease, jails, institutions, and death. untreated. I got a message from a home group member today who wanted to console me about my cousin, and she said to me, "Sarah, you have a solid sobriety, so keep it first and foremost as you navigate this path. It's great we get to really honour the dead and act with grace and with all the wisdom the program has taught us. Look after yourself and look out for others. I like to be reminded who I am, what I am, and what I need to do. I need the discipline of AA, because without it, I will do just enough to make the pain go away, and I don't get to have the freedom. And the question that I get to ask myself is, how free do I want to be? What am I willing to do? Because those who adopt an entirely new way of being get a whole new life, and that's the life that I want. And so I'll finish by saying I get to go and honour my family member this Wednesday and celebrate him. And I also get to continue to go to meetings, sponsor women, receive sponsorship, be of service, and do the suggested things and stay close to my higher power. So I get to have this wonderful, beautiful, free life that's been given to me. Thank you for letting me share."
Thank you so much, Sarah, for your very moving story. I'm sorry for your loss. Right, that takes us to the end of our meeting. That's all we have time for today. So thank you to Jason, Fran and Sarah for joining us in the studio today, and to all of you for listening. We are on air every Sunday morning at 10:45 a.m. here on Planet FM 104.6. If you wish to speak to someone directly, please call 0800 AA Works. That's 0800 229 6757. Or go to the AA website at aa.org.nz, where you can find a whole raft of information. Could we all close the meeting with the Serenity Prayer, please? God,
grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, courage to change the things I can, and wisdom to know the difference.
Thank you, everyone.
Just wanting to get home. I need to get home today.